You know, you women, you're great. Well, you can talk to each other. Men aren't like that. We're just not born with whatever it takes. That ability.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place Edition. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 15, House of God. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
There's actually something almost exciting in this episode. Shall we get to it?
Sure. Doesn't
All right.
it seem, though, that we're both like simultaneously much further along and not quite as far along as 15 episodes in? The season's pacing has been so weird.
Well, the season is also real long. Like, it's 90210 season length, so that's part of it. But yeah. All right, let's start with our B plot. Enter Joe. Ooh. So Andrew Hsu has to start by showing off his athletic form by going out for a jog with Allison, who's struggling and hating life. Apparently, Billy has decided that exercise is what Allison needs to take her mind off Keith, to which she bitches Billy out for constantly bringing up his name. Apparently, Billy got this advice from a Lady Mag listicle about beating the blues.
Oh, Billy. Is that Billy. Also where he got the idea to wear ladies' tank tops? Because
honestly,
that would be a good explanation.
Get a job. While they jog on, we see behind them a beautiful brunette in a sleeveless turtleneck checking info in the classifieds. And she also must shop at the same stores that Allison does because she is 100% wearing the same ugly belt here that Allison was in her first scene in the last episode.
Yep.
I made a side-by-side for the visual aids. I will say this for Daphne Zuniga in this role, her hair is still so cute. It's like one of the few things that has aged well.
Yeah, it looks great. I mean, really, and I love that, like, their idea of transplanted New Yorker is like, okay, it's Los Angeles, so we can't put her in like an actual turtleneck, but a sleeveless right. black turtleneck.
Mm-hmm.
That'll give them the idea. Yep. Also, let's make her needlessly rude.
Well, we'll get to that as well. So Michael's on his way out when he runs into this lady coming into the complex. Rhonda's arrival is convenient because this newcomer wants a two-bedroom, not the studio that's available. So Rhonda offers to move out of her current place and into the smaller one and is instantly way too familiar. The brunette seems slightly off-put by Rhonda's handsiness, but she lets Rhonda and Jane lead her up to look at a place. In the process, finally telling us her name, which of course we in the future already know, is Joe Reynolds. She is hilariously unimpressed by the thirsty vibe coming off both Rhonda and Jane in clip two.
So, Joe, who's the other bedroom for?
Darkroom. I'm a photographer.
Oh, that's great. A lot of us in the building are into that kind of thing. You know, the creative stuff. Mm-hmm. So there'll always be someone around.
Nice, friendly building?
Exactly. Like one big family.
How cozy. Yeah, in New York, we all live vertically. Here it's horizontally. I can't find elevators anywhere.
Well, we'll need you to fill an application and make a deposit.
How soon can you be out?
Let's see. I can get some of the guys at the gym to help me pack.
Today?
Yeah, sure. If you're in that much of a hurry.
Okay. It's all settled.
One happy family comedy.
Yeah. What? Also, like, a lot of us are into the creative stuff, so there's always someone around. For what? What does that mean?
Yeah. Do you mean Jake creatively fixing his bike by the pool? Because that's the only thing we're really seeing. And also, this is not how New Yorkers who are in or have moved to Los Angeles think about the differences.
No.
It's like, you know what I miss? Elevators.
Seriously.
Said no one.
No, what New Yorkers think when they go to LA is, wow, I can afford four times the space here.
Yeah,
or they
exactly.
could then. Not so much now, but at the time. Anyway, walking out instead of filling out an application is a power move that wouldn't work everywhere, but clearly Joe can tell what kind of chump she's dealing with because she is from New York. And later she comes stomping into the courtyard to interrupt Jake nosing around a box of her equipment, and they have a meet, not that cute, in clip three.
So you're a photographer then.
And so you're CIA or KGB or just nosy.
Well, the box was in front of my door, wasn't it? I'm Jake Hansen. I live right there.
Oh, the motorcycle aficionado. Yeah, Rhonda gave me capsule reviews on all the neighbors. There's Billy the writer, there's Michael the doctor, and there's Jake, the silent type.
And you're,
Joe, the private type.
Yeah, let me get that.
No.
No, I got it. Really. You get the best unit in the building.
So I've been told.
Your apartment. It's right above mine.
People, like, seriously, what is with the, like, touching her stuff? Ugh.
Yeah.
Also, it's not aficionado.
No, it's not.
Noah. Mozart.
Yeah. Although, you got the best unit in the building. It's not a bad line.
No. Staring at a woman's butt. Pretty good. And her hair really is amazing. Remember this, like, in Three Seasons, if we live that long, when Zuniga just sort of doesn't care anymore, and there's a lot of split-end-ness happening. So, yeah, but it looks great right now.
Yep. So remember how Rhonda said she could be out that day? Apparently that was literally true, because it's still bright light out and the apartment is empty except for Joe's stuff, which I guess she was just driving around town in a truck looking for a place she could move into in a matter of hours, whatever.
Sure, that's how that works.
Also, the 90s furniture, you can see in the visual aids, the lamp with the Japanese shade. It's like, oh, that takes me right back to a moment in time.
Sure, like, does. Yes. Yeah.
So Billy warns her, or sorry, Jake warns her about not trying to shower if she can hear him in his shower downstairs. And I really hope that's not something she can actually hear through the floor in this dump. Wow.
Yeah, Jesus.
But she opens the door for him to leave now that he's delivered the box and declines his offer to show her around town. And as soon as he's gone, she picks up the phone and that has amazingly been connected in the 20 minutes since Rhonda emptied out the place, and leaves a message for her dad telling him she's okay, she's in L.A., and she'll write and explain everything soon. Ooh, mysterious.
She'll write. Aw. Mm-hmm.
So wait a few years, then she'll get a very large desktop computer, set it up in her kitchen, and send him an email. Elsewhere later, Allison is ready to go to bed at 8:30, don't see the problem, and claims to Billy that it's fatigue, not depression, but Billy's been keeping track and claims she's sleeping 15 hours a day since she and Keith broke up. Look, people like sleep. It doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, it's true.
You can also go to the visual aids to see the decoration in this scene, which is a weird hat, like, nailed to the wall behind him. It's like,
which is in the frame when he's making all these, like, skeptically doptical faces at her claims, and then there's this, like, aggressively cheery primary colored hat.
It's very strange. It's like a church hat. Like, it's bizarre. Yeah. Anyway, Billy is worried that if Allison doesn't deal with her feelings and get back to her old self, she's going to try and call Keith. But she melodramatically suggests that maybe this experience has changed her and she'll never be her old self again. And Billy's like, whatever. And the next day, it's his turn to help Joe continue moving in. She tells him she's currently an amateur photographer, but hoping to become professional, and shades his claim that he's a writer since she didn't think anyone in L.A. reads. And he shades her back for New York snobbishness, despite having, you know, chosen to move there. She guardedly says she needed a change. And then the phone rings and she hangs up without taking it, drawing Billy's suspicion and some worried thrumming on the score. And then later, Allison's just trying to do her laundry when she finds one of Keith's shirts in the basket and has just finished taking a long, creepy sniff when Joe appears. Since Allison's not trying to cry openly, she's kind of cold to Joe, but takes a break from sniffing the shirt a second time to show Joe where on the dryer she needs to kick it to make it start. And it doesn't work even after they both kick the shit out of it and then crack up and introduce themselves. And she finally announces that Joe finally announces she just broke up with her husband, and Allison tells her she just broke up with someone else's husband. So they go out, but first they pregame in Joe's half-set-up apartment. Though Allison is in a baby doll dress with a tiny floral print and, again, Keds. Oh, Allison.
Yeah. Like,
you know,
and
you just
scrunchie.
Broke up.
that matches everything. No,
oh,
no.
Yeah.
A I know those classic. Are back, but no.
So Allison admires a framed black and white self-portrait of Joe looking repressed and depressed, as she puts it. She never really loved her husband, unlike Allison and Keith. She married him because at 20, she mistook security for love. They had a great apartment on the Upper East Side with a beautiful view of the river, but one day she woke up and realized she had to be irresponsible. And then, bumming herself out, she asks where the nearest hotspot is, and Allison takes her tragic middle school dance look to Shooters. Where else? Where they end up flirting with a couple of dudes. Those dudes get condescending, so Joe has to wreck them at pool and then barely escape a brawl after this, clip 4.
You know, Joe, you're not very ladylike.
A gentleman always pays his debt. Forget it. Let's get out of here.
Shh.
Our money first.
Bitches.
That may be, but this bitch just beat your pants off.
That was incredible. Yeah, the billiards room, the penthouse, used to play for hours.
You can't hear this, obviously, but then the guy that she just sharked, who called them bitches, like, lunges at them.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to hit them, which I'm sure he would have if his friend hadn't interfered. Like, first of all, her kiss-off line sucks. Like, there were 15 different versions of that that were better. Like, who's a bitch now? Just for one. And then he's like just going to deliver a beating to them for beating
them. Yeah, in the middle of a crowded bar.
In the middle of a crowded bar, in the middle of an episode where the A plot, which we'll get to, is about domestic violence.
Yeah.
And this is played as like, oh, Joe is getting into a wacky scrape. Like,
Joe's such a cool girl. Look at her in her jeans and her sleeves and her being good at pool.
Yeah. No, this is not the right tone.
No
show.
So Allison brings Joe up to Mulholland to show off the view. And Joe says this is what she came there for. This feeling of freedom. Allison says she feels like Thelma or Louise. But Joe means she doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow and she doesn't care. She has total freedom to be who she wants to be. And today, this would be the moment when she kisses Allison. Like, she doesn't, but it feels very subtextually queer. I don't know. Maybe just me.
Well, and definitely the incel pool victim was implying that they were Lebanese.
Right.
Not very ladylike. Like, that was definitely 90s code.
Yes.
So... yeah, unfortunately, that does not occur.
No. Instead, Allison has to deny to Joe's question that she has alienated everyone in the building. Joe is scared of leaving everyone she knows because she's bad at making friends. And she pulls out a bottle of pills prescribed by the shrink her husband picked for her and says she doesn't think she's going to need them anymore. And this also feels very of its time as Joe chucks the bottle off the cliff and Allison applauds her for, you know, no more safety net. And is like, well, we don't know that she didn't need those, like, just because it was the husband shrink.
Like,
I mean,
so you're just going to also like 90s psychotropic medication. Like, I wouldn't just step off those cold turkey, but okay, good luck.
Yeah.
Television person.
Sure. Put a pin in that. Maybe we'll come back to it, perhaps. Not this week, but sometime. Anyway, it Allison happened. Then comes home to find Billy waiting up for her. Allison loves Joe, but Billy still thinks that she's weird. And Allison assures Billy that he's still her best friend. Did Allison have zero friends before Billy moved in? Because, yikes. That is sad.
Yeah, like, I would need her to count the car and still put the car ahead of Billy, because come on, girl.
Billy is still doing broken heart research in Allison's magazines, but she says she's recovered so he can throw them away. But now he's kind of into them. I mean, they are fun. It's fun to do quizzes. I get it.
True.
So then Jake is in Chekhov's shower when the water goes cold, and he goes stomping up to Joe's apartment to pound on the door instead of to the building manager like he did the last time this happened. Joe is obviously impressed by his body in a towel, as are we all, and flirtily admits that she forgot about the water and was brushing her teeth, and he gets flustered and takes off, and the editor treats us all to a tracking shot of him the whole way down the stairs in his towel. Again, I'm not mad.
No, but, I mean, okay, the episode's running short, but so can his towel, as far as we all are concerned.
And his final word on Joe for this episode is that there are definite possibilities. We will see. On to the A plot. One of Michael's colleagues beats his wife. I mean, sorry, but that's what happens. And yikes, a lot of bad shit in here, but let's just try and get through it.
Yeah.
So Jane is bitching that Michael volunteered her for the decorating committee of doctors' wives for some hospital party that's coming up. And obviously she wants to get out of it, but he guilts her into it by saying it'll be her chance to stop thinking of the hospital as another world that she has no place in by buying some streamers. Okay, dude.
Yeah, or borrowing Brandon's Welcome Home Brenda printer. I don't think so. Oh, the sign. She is so bad.
Some guy named Scott, who is a top pediatrician there, has a boat, and he and Michael are going to go out sailing before rounds. And at the marina, Scott is blandly telling Michael to go into plastic surgery where he will get rich and the patients rarely die. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Jane is meeting with Liz McBain, another wife, better known to all of us as Sarah.
That Hallie Lowenthal person.
Mm-hmm. From My So-Called Life. What a coincidence. She's the wife of this Scott, Michael's new sailing pal. Liz and Jane have so much in common, and they're already in love with each other and planned a couple dinner out for the four of them. And at the restaurant, they're in a booth with the girls on one side and the guys on the other, which is not how it goes. But Liz is telling a story about trying to fix the sink naked that ends with her hitting herself in the left eye and giving herself a huge shiner that Jane tells her is not too bad. Given the spoiler I've already dropped, this means that Scott found time to hit her between everyone meeting in the lounge at the hospital and dinner the same night. So, yikes. Yikes.
Yeah, yikes. Hat tip also to makeup, which does a surprisingly subtle job, like not later, and we'll get to it, especially in the visual aids. But the... like you can see it, but you can also see that it's been expertly covered, which I guess it's not a surprise because makeup, but given that it's fake, it looks less fakey than these things usually do.
True. Yes.
Does not last.
Yes. No, it lasts. It does not. So then in the bathroom, Jane and Liz reiterate what fans their husbands are of each other. Given how great Scott is with kids, Jane is surprised that the McMains don't have kids, but Liz says they're too busy. And then Jane notices a stain on Liz's weird flowy jacket and ignores her attempts to shrug Jane off as she takes the jacket off to treat the stain. But as soon as it's off, Jane sees finger-shaped bruises on both of Liz's upper arms. And Liz shrugs those off, too. Probably nothing to worry about, I guess. But the next day, as Jane and Michael clean their apartment, Michael calls Jane's concerns about Liz ridiculous. Just a sidebar, I don't believe that Michael vacuums ever, even though we see him holding one. No, don't buy it.
Yeah, me neither.
Michael says that with his patients, Scott is patient and gentle, and there's no chance he hit his wife, and then also accuses Jane of being nosy, and she counters by calling him political, meaning, you know, wanting to be politic at work. But then Jane backs down and not only agrees that she should disbelieve the evidence of her own eyes, but also that she was probably letting her imagination run wild after too many TV movies.
Oh, boy.
So later, while they set up for the party, Jane's impressed when Liz sits down at the piano and starts playing some competent adult contemporary instead of helping put up decorations. Liz says music is her escape. Jane cheerfully says she thinks all doctors' wives need one, so Liz has to be a little more obvious in what she's trying to communicate in clip 5.
Can't even go near the piano when he's home. I have to go to the practice room at the community college. Sorry. Of course, when you're first married like you guys, he'd sit there for hours listening to my concertos, sonatas, chopsticks.
The hospital changes him.
I really try, you know, to be there for him.
be understanding. But sometimes no matter what I do, it's just not right.
He gets angry?
Very angry. I look at you and Michael and I remember what we had in the beginning, before all the pressure. That's why I'm glad we met.
Me too.
Okay.
What is that music?
Wow.
Oh my God.
She's like, well, now that I've sort of unburdened myself, lunch.
That was sort of like the outro music to like something like Empty Nest or like Golden Girls.
Seventh Heaven.
Like
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Also, that's where we see the sign, which is classic 90s mismatched fonts. It's so terrible. Mm. Like Mancini Designs. You already in trouble, girl.
So Jane lets herself be taken out for lunch, but she is secretly worried. And in the car on the way to the party, she expresses her concerns to Michael, who tries to talk her out of them again in clip six.
She asked for help.
Well, I think that's what this friendship is. Some kind of cry for help.
Well, you know, she's an intelligent, well-educated woman.
Well, what difference does that make?
Well, she'd know what to do, where to go.
Unless she's in denial or disbelief. Honey, she's scared. She's terrified. I mean, think about it. You won't talk about it. You won't consider it. Imagine how she feels.
Okay. You think she's a battered wife?
Yes.
What proof do we have?
I told you.
Yeah, but what concrete proof? And even if you were, I mean, my God, what are we supposed to do?
Call the police? Go to the head of the hospital?
Yeah, but over what, sweetheart? A couple of bruises? A look in her eye? A look only you see? You know, if we're wrong, Scott's career could be destroyed. If there's a problem, it's between him and her. If there's a problem.
I don't believe what I'm hearing.
Look, honey, until she asks for help, there's nothing you can do. Especially not tonight.
Oof.
Mm.
There's so much bad in that sentence, in that whole exchange, like starting with the idea that like she's an educated woman, she has resources, therefore she couldn't be in an abusive relationship. Like, it's not how things work at all.
Anyone not how that works.
Be.
No.
Ugh. Anyway, I guess we know.
And
this is
also, the one that really stuck out or stuck in my throat was his career could be destroyed. Like, yeah, like, look, we have some screen grabs in the visual aids of his boating outfit. That alone should get his medical license pulled because it seared my corneas off. So let's not make him the victim here, shall we?
Well, no. So at the party, Liz stays in the corner looking awkward until Jane makes a point of coming over to chat. She tries to get away to replenish the name tags, but Jane gently invites her to talk if there's something she wants to talk about. And Liz finally admits that Scott hit her one time and now it's over. She doesn't want to make him angry. Jane says she wants to be there for Liz, but Liz tearfully takes off. And Scott sees them talking and comes over to Jane as soon as Liz has left. He so admires the way that women can talk to each other because men just don't have that. Jane says she has to get back to the party, and Scott, guess what, grabs her by the arm, like men do on these shows, to stop her leaving their conversation and asks if everything's all right. And Jane pointedly shakes him off, and then Michael comes over, and Scott leads him off to network with some other guy, so that's that for now. But the next day, Scott finds Michael alone in the lounge and reports that Liz told him about Jane's insinuation. And as expected, Michael stands by Jane and is an ally to women. Just kidding. Clip 7.
Pretty weird accusations.
I know.
They are just your wife's, though, right?
Your life is none of my business. Or Jane's.
Well, now, if I agreed to that, that would be admitting I was doing something wrong.
Like I said, it's none of our business.
I want you to know I have never struck my wife. I never would. Now, whatever Jane said has Liz extremely upset. And as for me, well, a rumor like this, I don't have to tell you how damaging that can be. I'm a doctor. I love my job, helping these kids. I love my wife. Come on, do you really want to believe that I could do something like this?
No, of course I don't.
I didn't think so. Look, Liz and I, we have our problems like everybody else. but I would never.
I know.
Do you? Like,
well, it's worth noting also that the actor playing Scott is like a head taller than Calabro and is looming right up on him for a lot of this scene. Ugh. I mean, this guy is not great, but he has been written and directed in this very weird, like PSA meets Broadway way. You don't see it as much in this scene, but in a later scene, there's all these like Rodin poses happening that I'm like, can you bring it down a notch? You're an abuser. Just sit there, please. Oh God, this whole storyline. I can't.
Yeah.
But I will.
So at least this display seems to have convinced Michael that Jane is right, despite what he says in the conversation. And yet when we see them next, they're clearly in the middle of an argument about it while heading out to a movie. And the phone rings while they're at the door. And since Michael's not on call, Jane wants to ignore it. But instead, he ignores her and picks up. And it's Liz who's crying as she asks to speak to Jane. And Michael feels like a real piece of shit. So then they drive up to find Liz waiting in a driveway, contusions and bruises all over her face. Less subtle, as Sarah noted earlier.
Yes, the classic, quote, random TV distribution.
Yeah.
After an incident like this, I'll also say they pull up together in like whatever, a two-door coupe, whatever car. And there's like, we have to watch the whole procedure of like getting three people into what's basically a two-person car. But like,
right.
Scott just beat her up. Let her sit in the fucking front.
Honestly.
Thank you. Anyway, but continue.
I mean, she's possibly in the back seat so that Michael can like dramatically turn around to look at her. And when he sees her face in like the street lamp, he feels even worse, and he should. It's bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So back at the Mancini's place, Michael cleans up Liz's face while she ruefully says it usually falls to Scott to patch her up after he's beaten her up. Tomorrow he will come and find her and beg her forgiveness, but Liz insists that she's not going back this time, and Jane is helpful-ish. Clip 8.
You can stay here as long as you like. Afterwards, there's shelters, places you can go.
Bitch, your husband is the manager of this complex. Maybe he could try to hook her up with an apartment. Just a thought.
Yeah.
Anyway. Jane goes on to assure Liz that Scott is the one with the problem, and Liz realizes her situation must be impossible for people outside the marriage to understand, but that Scott always convinced her to forgive him, and the cycle would continue, and he wasn't always like this. She blames the hospital and everything that came with it for making him violent, which, okay, it seems like a reach, but fine. Like, it's just from stress? I don't know. I guess we're supposed to think like this is the ghost of Christmas future for Jane and Michael, but like they have different kinds of bad problems, well, as I recall.
This is also, I just want to note that the actor is really good in this scene, which is really long and appears to have been like, let's write down every single excuse that victims of domestic violence make in these situations and have her use all of them.
Right.
As a illustrative scene, which she makes it work as best she can. I've always liked her, but this is like, it really is a long scene that they didn't need. Like, more Jake in a towel, I think, is more where this show's strengths lie, and perhaps we could balance it out a little bit.
Yeah, so the end of it is she thanks Michael profusely for taking her in because she had nowhere else to go, and he's so kind and blah, blah, blah. And then he shrugs that off, but with kind of a weird tone in clip 9.
Oh, no. No. I mean, after what Jane said to me, the things you told her, I should have done more. Look, I didn't want to believe that Scott could do something like this.
Neither did I. See, the worst part is, I love him.
Hey.
I mean, boy.
Yeah. Like, this is what I mean. She's like too good for this material. Mm-hmm. It is almost affecting. And in case it's not, the piano would like to underline it so hard that the pen goes through the paper. Although I suppose I should be glad that the inappropriate sexy guitar of all emotions was not used here.
Ugh. Indeed. So that would have been a fine place to leave it, in my opinion, but that's not what happens. Instead, Scott finds Michael in the lounge, where Michael defiantly announces that he's going to tell their boss, Levin, about Scott. And I'm not familiar enough with labor law to know whether, like, this would be a fireable offense. Like, it didn't happen at the hospital. The only thing I could think is that if they have to sign, like, an honor code or something.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the only way that I can see that this would be like along Michael's axis of, or is it that he's a mandatory reporter?
Oh, but maybe.
But I also feel like, where would that, like, unless she filed charges, I'm not sure that falls under the work purview.
Right.
I mean, you know, Scott sucks, do what you have to do, but if they could have thrown a line in there about how that works.
Right.
Not that we ever see them again, so doesn't matter.
Right. So what happens here is, they go back and forth with Michael, like, reading Scott and Scott getting madder and madder. And then he slams Michael against some lockers and Michael dares Scott to attack him. And then Scott drops him again and starts pacing and babbling about what's going to happen to him and how the stress of the job made him have to hit his wife. And Michael tells him to go to the boss himself and admit it. And Scott begs Michael to come with him, and then after a moment, Michael does. Cool. I don't know how we're supposed to feel about this. It's very weird.
Yeah, like, I was half expecting there to be like the hallway in Lucas slow clap.
Uh huh.
Like, what? I don't know how to feel about this. Right. I mean, actually, I do. I feel gross and glad that I don't have to watch this again.
Indeed, that is the end. So let us name our episode MVP. I'm going to say Rhonda and the crew with the gym, because that's some fast ass packing. Good job.
I'm going to go with Joe. There were a couple of hiccups in her debut, but her hair looks great. Smart accessorizing. She didn't spend any money on that belt, apparently. And even if she had, she'd have made the money back at pool.
Nice. Least valuable player. I mean, it's obvious, but, you know, Scott the wife beater.
Yeah. Among credits cast, Michael the not wife believer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Two bad tastes that taste bad together.
Yeah, they sure do. Next time on Again With This Beverly Hills 90210 edition, Ellen is still boring, Kelly is still yanking Dylan's dick, and Camille is still picking the scab of her relationship with David instead of celebrating her freedom. Not least from the claw machine engagement settings on this show, why do I mention this? No reason at all! Celebrate your freedom from early aughts fashion with our visual aids. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can support our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. Thanks, friends. I'm cartoonishly brusque New Yorker Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Pretty Weird Accusation Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Suspiciously Light Box of Camera Equipment David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.